Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. Double G Show here. Money in the Bank post show. I have some folks returning who I chatted with earlier this week. Scott, Keela, we did a show about our favorite WWE moments, and now we're back to talk about Money in the Bank. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm still salty after this show, but I'm doing good, so I'm here.
And Keela, are you also feeling a little salt there, or are you doing okay?
You know what? I feel a little salty. So for the first time, I'm going to indulge in some saltiness with Scott, because the main event was definite choices, because I never heard a crowd go mute like that since Beyonce's Renaissance tour.
Wait. Okay, wait. Why did the crowd go mute on Beyonce's Renaissance tour? I don't know if I know this story.
All right. So there's a song, and at one point, everybody goes on mute, and that's the mute challenge. You shh.
Oh, okay. Part of the song. Got it.
Exactly. So when Solo won, whole crowd went mute.
Okay. We're going to get to that in a second. But my question to you is, like, you figured that's what was going to happen, right? You thought that this was kind of a vehicle to get to SummerSlam and have Solo as a bit of a viable contender.
I did. But I was not expecting the entire air to get sucked out of an arena like that, because it kind of really exposed the fact that, wow, Solo is not exactly a heat magnet. He's the opposite of that. Like, he has the power to really chill an audience. And when they did the press conference, they went to Michael Cole and Corey Graves, and even Corey said, this place is dead quiet. I mean, it was silent in that building for minutes on end.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But here, so let's circle back to this when we talk about that match. We'll actually go second with the main event, because what I want to open with is John Cena stuff. John Cena comes out. Now, there were whispers that he was in Toronto today, so I was not surprised when Trish introduced him. He's wearing a shirt that says the retirement tour. And then he's starting to tell us that he's thinking about a retirement tour. I'm like, brother, your shirt told us that you already made this decision. It reminds me of, I'm going old school now, because only because we were talking about our top five favorite moments in WWE. Going all the way back to 1993, Hulk Hogan and Brutus the Barber Beefcake have decided to become a tag team. And they're going to face Money Inc. at WrestleMania. And they're thinking, like, what should we call ourselves? What's a good name for us as a twosome? How about the Mega Maniacs? all while Jimmy Hart has the Mega Maniacs on the back of his jacket already. So this was decided. And that's what the John Cena retirement tour t-shirt reminded me. He's like, okay, we know your t-shirt just told us what's going on here. But what's interesting about this retirement tour, it sounds like he's going to do a bunch of dates next year. He said, it's going to be my last Royal Rumble. It's going to be my last Elimination Chamber. It's going to be my last WrestleMania. On the press conference, he said, it's going to be my last Money in the Bank. And then I think later he may have said possibly doing 30 to 40 dates. So maybe it goes all the way through the entire year. So I'm guessing, and this is going to be for Scott, because he always complains how WWE doesn't come to his town. I think there's going to be like John Cena's last moment in as close to everybody's hometown as WWE makes possible. I think we may get that. What do you think that they're going to come visit you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and shut that down, because that's not happening. They don't come to the V no more. I don't know what it is. They came like a year and a half, maybe like 2 years ago. They came to Petersburg, Virginia for a nice little house show at Virginia State. But yeah, they're not coming nowhere to the V. If they come to Norfolk on this John Cena retirement tour, I'll definitely go. But yeah, I have no confidence or faith that any serious wrestling promotion is going to come anywhere within 3 hours of me.
Okay, let's say they come within 3 hours. Will you try and find a way to go say goodbye to one John Cena if he gets close?
Yeah, if they come to Norfolk, I think I'll have to make that trip. Me and the kids, because I'll have to take the kids. I won't be able to go by myself, so I'll definitely have to take the kids. But me and the kids will definitely make a trip to go see John Cena for sure. This will be special.
Keila, I'm sure he will come near you. Is this something that you think you'd be interested in actually going to see live, to say goodbye to John Cena?
First of all, Scott, stop shaking your head.
He ain't coming to see the Hawks arena. Nah, he ain't stepping foot in there. He gonna skip that down. Wait,
aren't you getting you're getting a pay-per-view? Did they announce that?
Yeah, we're getting Bad Blood October 5th. John Cena will come to Atlanta. He will be there, unlike Scott's hometown. He'll leave you high and dry again. So maybe I can slide you some tickets to the A. But in all seriousness, you know, WWE is actually going to have, dare I say, and this is a bold prediction, now that we know that we have a John Cena retirement tour, I think they're going to sell out every house that John Cena is advertised for. And they're going to like break records for every market they're in for a SmackDown or a Monday Night Raw for the next year. This is a license to print money. They're going to sell the houses, and that's good for WWE. And to piggyback off what Gigi said, I saw the t-shirt and I'm like, dude, you're not retiring tonight. Because as soon as I saw 2025, I'm like, Cena, you can shut up. We're going to see you next year. No need to be all overly dramatic. This is my last time ever coming to Toronto. It's very emotional for me. But see the 25? See that? I'll be here sometime next year.
Got a guy text me. He said that, or he was at the show. He said when John Cena started to talk about his retirement, this is his words, not my words, grown men tears. I couldn't believe how, you know, because like Keila said, I wasn't taking this seriously. I don't know if this was acting, but John did make the voice crack a couple times as he was doing the promo. But I saw it as, you know, because he is so robotic when he has to kind of talk about real stuff, as we'll talk about in a second, because someone did ask him about Vince in the press conference. And I just thought, oh, like, you know, this is what John Cena, the character of John Cena, believes a retirement conversation with the audience is about. Like, you hem and haw, and you're not sure what's going on, and you're kind of like, do I want to do this? I think I'm going to do this. And then at the end, you go, oh yeah, I have this t-shirt made. This is a giant marketing thing. We're going to go to all these houses. Like Keila said, they're going to sell out some houses. And so that aspect of it makes it feel a little bit less real and a little bit more like markety, which I think is totally fine because that's what WWE is. WWE is just a giant marketing company and they're so good at it. But what it made me wonder is, I don't know how closely either of you followed the Sting retirement in AEW, but one of the criticisms of the Sting retirement in AEW is that we knew Sting had an end date, but what if you wanted to see Sting one last time in your market? You had no idea if he was going, you had no idea if it was going to be his last time, because they didn't promote it like that. Like I went to Oakland to see an AEW Collision show, and he was there, and that turns out to be the last time that I would see Sting in person. But it wasn't marketed as that, because if it was marketed as that, they would have probably had more than 5,000 people or whatever it was in the Oakland, old Oakland Coliseum. So I think, you know, WWE wasn't going to miss that opportunity like AEW did, but AEW has also felt very real, and this one's going to feel very markety, but I think it's okay. I think it's what you would expect them to do. And in the press conference, he did say, when you see me in the ring and then I'm done, you're never going to see me do anything physical. The only time you see me, I'll be wearing a suit. I won't be a guest referee. I won't be falling through a table. I'm just going to be done. And he did take some pot shots, generic pot shots, at other pro wrestler retirements and how dishonest they were. I think that's the word he used, dishonest. Such a John Cena word, right? You can't say that they were fake retirements or that they were lying. They had to be dishonest. And I think it's going to be fantastic. Now, what's funny about this, and I kind of want to get this based off of, you know, we talked about this on the Tuesday show, you know, kind of where you checked in to wrestling and what your what era is kind of your era. So for me, the John Cena era is kind of as I have kids and as my kids get into wrestling. And so he's kind of he's one of the first guys or talents who is on top when my kids are in it. But he's kind of post my childhood. So the way I sort of look at John Cena is not the same way that I would have looked at The Rock in 1998 or Austin in 1998. I was still, you know, I was in my early 20s, but I was still sort of like, you know, that kind of fan. And so my thought of John Cena retiring is like, yeah, I've just seen this guy like forever, like longer than anybody else on top in the history of my wrestling fandom, because he was just on top for so long. So every WrestleMania that I ever went to, he's there. And so I've seen him a ton, but I don't have that same, like, you know, romanticism with him as I would with other wrestlers from my youth. But what about you, Scott? Where do you fall on, you know, John Cena being from your era? Like, is this kind of a sad thing, or are you like, yeah, Cena's cool, he did a rap album, we're good, but he wasn't my guy?
He did do a rap album. I will say, as a child, I did cop that rap album.
Signed copy?
Huh?
I have a signed copy.
Do you have a signed copy?
One of my friends, she knew him, or she actually was a writer for WCW Magazine. So she was kind of close to the inside of the business. And he was signing albums in New York where she was. And so she kind of was like, yeah, you know, I'm a writer for wrestling. Like, and so she kind of got in and he signed it to my kids. I have it somewhere. I got to find it. But yeah, so I got a signed copy from the one and only John Cena.
Yeah, he's a bad, bad man. Shout out to Bumpy Knuckles and the trademark. But for me, yeah, this is a big deal. Like, John Cena was the pinnacle. He was the benchmark. He was, I mean, when, like, he, for me, when I, like when I started with Shelton, he was just like getting the US title from the Big Show and stuff like that. But like, when I really got into it and was really like digging into stuff, he was the guy, and he was the guy for a long time. And not only that, he was consistent. Like, even when I look back at stuff, like, he has a hell of a catalog. You know, he's got a hell of a match catalog. He's got a hell of a promo catalog. And yeah, he was definitely overpushed at times, as far as there were times he could have took a nail and he didn't. But that dude always showed up. Like he, as far as we know so far, because everybody seems to have something that comes out, he ain't had no dirt on him. He like the LeBron James of WWE to an extent. You know, he's had this longevity. He's been on top for so long, and he's been good for so long. Yeah, this is a huge deal for me. So I'm going to make sure I try and cherish and enjoy all of this. And I'm hoping that the match quality that we get is going to be something that he'll look back fondly on himself, because he's got a high standard as far as his matches, especially towards that back half when he was champion. That U.S. title run is historic. You know, the open run, that's an historic run for me. So, yeah, this is a big deal.
All right, Keila, where does John Cena sit on your list of favorites?
I would say he stands pretty high on that list. I think that a lot of people over the last several years, I think the last five or six, to be fair, can really say during the mid-2000s and early 2010s, John Cena in a lot of ways kept the lights on in WWE. Like, he was the guy for the time. He moved merchandise. He engaged a fan base that he tapped into, the kids. That's why he never turned heel. And I think as time goes away and you have him away from WWE, you really get to appreciate what he did. Yes, Super Cena was annoying at times, and he could have took some L's, as Scott said earlier. But for the moment, he was the guy at the top for a very long time. He did make some people along the way. The run he had in like 2015, 2016, 2017, he actually was a giver in that case. AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, for example, they benefited from working with John Cena. He gave people shine, and his promos during the latter stages of his career were God tier. So for me, I think when you step back and really look at what Cena did for WWE, he really kept them afloat, because who else was there as a guy that was the face, that had the charisma and the talent, and most importantly, the pull to push numbers in a way? He did that. And I think that's something that we can look back on and say, wow, if there was no John Cena, where would WWE be in the last 20 years?
Saving money on everything now at Menards. Create fresher, cleaner air with damp-rid products. Control the humidity in your space with a hanging bag moisture absorber. They're great for closets and laundry rooms. Grab a 3-pack on sale through September 8th. Save big on damp-rid moisture absorbers at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, I just want to shout out Pro Wrestling Joker, who was sending me notes from the show as it was going. He was there live. Also want to shout out Lady B, because we'll talk about what she just mentioned here. John Pollock from Post Wrestling asked, because John Cena basically said at this press conference, ask me anything. It was like an AMA, right? It was like a Reddit AMA. He's like, ask me anything. So John Pollock tried to couch the question with the theme, which is, you know, John Cena's retirement. And he's like, you know, your long career and, you know, it's tied to Vince McMahon. Do you have any thoughts on just your career being tied to Vince? And John Cena was, well prepared to answer that question in the way that WWE would have probably wanted him to ask that question. And he essentially said, you know, I've made my statements already. You can go search for them and find them if you really want them. And, you know, he did the thing about, you know, we need to look forward and not look to the past. I think maybe that might be ingrained in people's heads for when they do stuff like this. But and then he moved on and he said, you know, I appreciate the courage that you had in asking that. And there's like mixed feelings for people watching that, because I was telling somebody in the Discord, you know, you can go to these things, and if you go to them and you do get a chance to ask a question, you can kind of be part of the show, and I'm sure they want you to do that. But it is why that I never go to these things, because I don't want to be part of the show. I mean, if they pay me, like you give me some money, then I'll ask the question that you want. But then that's me as like a signed contractor, you know, working with you. I would never do it, by the way. But if you open your mic and you have a real reporter there, and that real reporter asks a real question, I don't think wrestling fans should be frustrated at that, because it, you know, oh, we're supposed to be celebrating John. It's a press conference. Like, you know, if you want to celebrate John, like, you know, there's probably an after party where he's going to be hanging out, and then you go celebrate him there. Like, so I appreciated John Pollock's question, but I also understand his, I could sense that he asked it in a certain way because he had the wrestling fan who wants to celebrate John Cena in mind. And there was a trickiness to the way that he asked it. But I do commend him for it, because, you know, most of the other questions were about, oh, will you ever turn heel and stuff like that, which is fine in this. It's fine, in this WWE universe. That's kind of what they want. But I wanted to mention what Lady B mentioned, because I thought it was interesting. I was like, wow, you know, John, I don't imagine John Cena woke up today and said, I'm doing this angle with WWE retiring, and someone's going to ask me about Vince. He probably didn't think that was going to happen. So
I think he did.
You think so?
I 100% think John Cena was like, if I'm going to open myself up like this, let me just have something ready in case they ask about Vince. I bet you he did.
Okay.
He seems like a calculated guy.
He said, I will not Paul Levesque this tonight.
listen, I've seen enough episodes of Total Bellas with my wife to know that man is very calculated in everything that he does, from where his slippers go when he walks in the house to where his wife is allowed to go in the house, okay? Or his girlfriend, girlfriend at the time. But yeah, very calculated guy.
So you're saying that He didn't put on his old man glasses and say, you know, I haven't read this lawsuit yet.
It's too many words. It's so many words, so much legal jargon. You tell me what it said, and I'll try to, you know, offer my take on it. He did not Paul Levesque this. That is a new verb we're using. And he was prepared properly. And he knows media training one-on-one. Yeah. That's the important thing.
Yeah. But hey, if you are a John Cena fan, I think this will be pretty special for WWE. And, you know, what Keila said earlier was so smart. They're on a run right now, and this helps them stay on that run. Because if they're not on a run because people are watching The Bloodline or people are watching Cody, this is the last time you'll ever see John Cena live is going to be a hook. And I know he's coming to my hometown. I know he'll be here in San Jose. And I got to just hope that my brother Ben Cruz, who works for The Ringer, you know, we get them nice tickets from The Ringer so I could be there.
Get that hookup.
Yeah.
Right.
WWE Ringer connection is awesome.
This the Cena tour might be a little harder this time.
That's what I'm saying. It might be harder. These might be hotter tickets. Okay, let's go back to the main event here. If the main event was a very straightforward old school tag team match, where the idea of this tag team match was, we're going to take the baby face, we're going to keep him in our corner. That baby face turned out to be Kevin Owens. And we're going to do all the things that we do to make sure that he never makes that hot tag. Then when he makes that hot tag, then Cody can run wild and then all chaos will ensue. I think for fans of more old school pro wrestling, they probably really loved this match. Now, the way that you do the heat in this match, a fan who is less patient with that style, maybe looking at their watch going like, okay, Kevin Owens, he's stuck in this corner, the stupid ref keeps going over to the babyface side for no reason whatsoever. Like, it's really like, you know, it's how pro wrestling is sort of originated for a lot of people back in the day. But if you're like a newer fan who maybe doesn't like this style, I could see them going like, oh, this stupid ref going to go hang out on the other side and let these heels just beat up on this baby face. And then when you finally tag out to Cena, Cena's running wild. I'm sorry, Cena, the new Cena being Cody Rhodes. Cody's running wild and he's beating up people so much so that he hit a dive and on poor Tangaloa. And I think Tangaloa just did not realize like how tall he is. And he took a bump and cracked the back of his head against the announcer's table. This is not Tangaloa's night, by the way. It just was not. And so as we get closer to the end here, so he gets back in the ring. Solo hits him with a spear for a two count. That was kind of like a little bit of an ode to Roman. Cody goes for the pedigree. Solo's arms are kind of thick. Like, I'm not sure Cody would have even got that pedigree anyways. But Solo gets out of it. And during this moment, he accidentally hits the referee. So we knew the ref bump was coming. We knew the bloodline stuff was coming. Kevin Owens hit a frog splash on Solo. Orton hit the RKO. They were trying to do the Shield powerbomb on this dude. And Fatu saved him. Jacob Fatu, my oos. Have you heard the story of me and Jacob being ooses, Scott?
Mm-mm, no, I have not.
Okay, you never heard the story. Okay, so we were in Chicago for one of the All Outs, and then there was a GCW show the night before, and we were there. They didn't really have a backstage. It was just like a sort of a curtained off area of the ring or of the arena. And so we walked over there and I saw him, and my co-host of the Fight Game podcast, John LaRocca, he booked out here in the Bay Area, and he booked Jacob a lot. So I got to see Jacob in person a lot. And so I told him like, hey, you know, one of my really good friends, John LaRocca. And he's like, LaRocca? Oh, LaRocca's oos. I was like, yeah, John LaRocca and I are really good friends. He's like, oh, you and LaRocca are friends? He's like, okay, you oos too. And so me and Jacob had our moment. So I got to be one of the ooses. So Jacob breaks it up. Jacob runs wild. But then this poor referee who was already kind of knocked silly, Jacob goes after, I think it was KO outside, and KO moves. And so he splashes the referee or avalanches the referee against the ring post. And then KO frog splashes Jacob on the announcer table. So then KO goes after Tama Tonga, has him in the package pile driver, and here is Tangaloa's moment. This dude has been thinking about this moment all night. I'm going to come in. I'm going to give him the low blow. This sets up the whole finish, and we go home. Somebody said that he did not actually hit the low blow. He hit the low taint. That's what I heard it described as. He missed, and so he had to redo it. And so maybe you know, KO kind of had to stand in this position a little longer than he probably wanted to. I don't know if you can actually feed the low blow from the behind, but I think KO might have stuck his rear end out a little bit more. Like, come on, dude! Like, just a little bit. You got to get the arm out a little bit more. And so he gets hit, finally does it correctly, and he low blows KO. So then Orton, Cody gives Solo two crossroads. Fatu breaks it up with his patented move, which he runs to the corner, jumps to the top rope, does not climb the top rope. He didn't need Jericho's learning tree to learn how to get to the top rope. He jumps onto the top rope in the corner. And I've seen him do it as a moonsault. He did it more as like a Phoenix splash kind of maneuver. Yeah, in the air. Hits it on Cody. Hits him with the implant DDT. They set up Cody for the spike. And the poor, poor referee gets thrown into the ring and has to make the three count. And then, like Keela said, there was some silence. So, Keela, based on your thoughts on the silence, do you believe that Solo is actually the wrong person in this side of the bloodline?
Oh boy, I will say that his performances as of late have been better, but the end of this show, my God, it kind of revealed you ain't Roman. because Roman would never have the crowd dead silent after a match of that magnitude ever. There'd be like people surprised, but there would always be a reaction. And I'm kind of mixed. I really don't know. I will say that I was more impressed by Jacob Fatu. I was going to say that off top because he went out there and the first move he took was a draping DDT and he popped right on up. And I said, it's going to be A-okay. Like when you pop up from that and Randy's like, oh, you built different. Yes, he is. He was the most impressive person to me in that match. And they're going to run Solo and Cody at SummerSlam for the WWE Championship. It's going to be solid. But that reaction, it was minutes of silence. They went off the air. They came back in the arena. And as I said earlier, it was Michael Cole and Corey Graves. And Michael and Corey was noting this crowd is still hushed. They probably were thinking, are we going to get an angle after this? They got nothing. They got a heel heat finish that had no heat. And it's the Bloodline standing there. I think if they had like a bit more of a hook to end the show, it would have left the crowd happier. But yeah, that lack of reaction said a lot to me. And I'm not looking forward to the match at SummerSlam, even though we're going to get like a good ending with Roman coming back, presumably. But yeah, that reaction in Toronto with Solo winning the way that he did and the lack of a pop or any boos, it was telling.
Scott, did you see it the same way?
Yes and no. I say no because I'm a little bit higher on what I've seen from Solo. Like I've thoroughly enjoyed him the last few weeks. Like I think
the promo from SmackDown was really good. It was produced, but it was
really good. It should have been live, like they advertised, but that's a whole nother story. But yeah, I've been really impressed with him. And I think the problem with this is Cody shouldn't be taking no L's. I understand what what you're trying to do, but I think this is a match where, like Keila said, Fatu showed up and showed out. And this is where you really kind of establish him and you establish the Bloodline. Like the Bloodline is still not established, and that's part of the problem. Let's not forget, Solo is still 0-24 against LA Knight on house shows, and everyone knows this. Everyone knows this, and everyone's seen this. Okay,
yeah, I agree with you because when I started sensing this was where we were going for the summer, I was like, okay, they should have started building up Solo killing dudes like months before.
Right.
Yeah,
and the other part of it is, you know, shout out to Loa. Instead of the low blow, he went for the blowhole. And, you know, never a good idea for anybody. We had KO poking that thing out and he still missed. I don't know what more KO could do for the man. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sure what more could have been done right there. But the match felt like something you would see on a big SmackDown or something. Mm-hmm. And that hurt the crowd. And man, if it was going to go like this, I might have closed with the women. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I might have closed with the women's Money in the Bank match if this is how everything was going to go, especially with the reaction Tiffany was going to get anyway. I know we'll talk about it later, but if you knew this was how it was going to go, I understand not closing with the world title. I thought that was a choice as it was, but I think the ladies had a real opportunity to close out the Money in the Bank pay-per-view with the Money in the Bank match.
I think they probably thought they were going to get a crazy amount of heat out of Solo winning. You know, it was really by the book. Like, this is what you do to set up the contender. But it does make me wonder if Solo is believable to the fans. Now, he is in Roman's shadow purposely as well, so he's got to deal with that. The Paul Heyman thing was supposed to set us up for that, right? Them putting Paul Heyman through the table because of the orders of Solo. That was supposed to get the heat on Solo and like, oh, we really want to see this guy get his butt kicked. And now we should want to see him get it more. I think Cody is going to get the crowd into it because I think he is so beloved. He will talk about this loss and talk about how, you know, he wants revenge and this and that. Like Cody will rile it up enough to where I think by the time we get to SummerSlam, I think it'll be fine. Now, what they do out of SummerSlam is going to have to be strong enough for Solo in losing that we're going to want to see Roman Reigns get revenge on him as well. So that's going to be an interesting trick. And, you know, the one thing about this show, I don't know if I would say that there was a great match on the show. I think there were some really good moments on this show, but I thought the angles outside of Damian Priest not kicking out in the title match, all of the angles kind of played out rather well. So that part of the show was really good, but you know, that it was a very angle sort of driven show, and rather than like this culmination of like, we want to see who wins and loses these matches. So and I kind of expected it. That's what these PLE, these bridge shows, I think Scott called it a bridge show before we went on air. That's what they have been. Like, I've been pretty vocal about Triple H's booking post WrestleMania. Like, I haven't been into the AJ Styles stuff or the Logan Paul stuff. Like, I just wasn't into it. It wasn't believable to me. But now is when they should be cooking with grease. So I think things will get really hot from the PLE standpoint, because, you know, going to SummerSlam, and then I think they're going to Berlin, then Bad Blood, and then Survivor Series, and then you're already at Royal Rumble again, and now we're back in WrestleMania season. All right, let's talk about let's talk about the match that was right before this, which was the Women's Money in the Bank match. Naomi, Zoey Stark, Lyra Valkyria, Tiffany Stratton, Chelsea Green, and Io Sky. This crowd loved them some Chelsea Green. Just all she had to do was move up one single rung on the ladder, and they were getting fired up as if this woman was going to win this Money in the Bank briefcase. Now, I understood how they were using her, and I thought they used her absolutely perfectly. My fear was, I think you kind of go a little bit overboard when you have this character who is there to kind of be a little bit of a comedic foil in the match, because there's all kinds of crazy spots going on, and you know, just some amazing stuff. And then the crowd is paying attention to this woman who's like scared of climbing the ladder. I think that character works great when she's almost there. You know, if I'm remembering correctly, there's a Royal Rumble and an Elimination Chamber match where Santino Marella like gets really close to winning, and then he loses, and like he's the comedic foil, and you're like, yeah, if he would have won that match, it'd been really stupid, but he didn't. So the crowd was into it because they were kind of just wondering. And so I thought they did it perfectly. If they would have had her win, then maybe you go a little bit over the top with it. I thought Tiffany Stratton, from the time I saw who's going to be in it, was like the perfect winner. She's got her heater, or the cleaner in Nia Jax with her. So they'll be doing some interesting stuff with this briefcase. But I have to commend, there were some crazy, crazy spots in this match. You know, I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because I will downplay a lot of this stuff that happens in AEW ladder matches, and even to an extent in the men's ladder match, though I found that to be fairly safe. I didn't think it was as chaotic as it could be. There was one moment in this match where Zoey Stark did something from the outside, and I think she hit her head on the ladder, like she was diving inside the ring and did some sort of flip and hit her head. And there were a couple of other kind of, ooh, you're a little worried spots in the beginning of the match. But by the time we got to the end of the match, they were cooking, and Io Sky and Zoey Stark had a spot where, you know, they're going through the ladder bridge, and I forget even what the move was, but Zoey Stark bounces off of this ladder bridge, and she's like almost bounces out of the picture completely. And Io is on her knees, but leans back as if she was like broken in half by this move. And that sell, Io Sky's sell, may have been the best moment in the entire show. And that's when Chelsea Green goes up the ladder. We think she's going to possibly win. The camera work was awesome here, because what they did is they zoomed in really tightly on her so that the viewer, now the live crowd could see this, but the viewer could not see that Tiffany Stratton was right behind her and underneath her. And then when Tiffany Stratton gets into the camera view, then you're like, oh, She's got her, and right when she gets her, she tosses her. Chelsea Green goes through two tables very perfectly, it looked like. So I think she's good. And then Tiffany Stratton wins this Money in the Bank briefcase. Keela, after a little bit of a rough start early, was this the best match of the night to you?
Yes, without question. They worked their asses off, and the beginning was rough. No one can deny that. But once they got the kinks out of the way, this match was like a demolition derby. Legit, Michael and Corey were like in awe of everything that was happening because the bumps the ladies were taking, Lyra taking bumps, the EO Zoe bump, the Michinoku driver on the ladder. And as you said, the bend that EO did was incredible. Like, you can feel like that hurt so bad. Chelsea Green being comedic, like, girl, you're not gonna jump up and grab the ladder. Like, you gotta let's be realistic.
You know what she should have done? She should have remember when Randy Orton would goof around and he'd do the leapfrog and split his legs out wide? Like, she should have done something fun like that. I would have died.
Then she used like the ladder as a pinata, like, I'm gonna knock the briefcase down to make it really easy for me to grab. Chelsea was the comedic MVP. She was so over. And I think this is one of WWE's best rehires in the last couple of years. The character's down packed, and she's going to take some crazy bumps. Jordynne Grace, thank you, girl, coming through, showed the footage. Oh, she did this in TNA. This is what she does. In high pressure situations, she takes bumps for the love of the game. And she did. And Tiffany, congrats to her. I figured she was going to win. And shout out to Tiffany as well, because when Naomi did the splits to hit the DDT on Zoe, she held the ladder. That's veteran instinct to make sure that move wasn't messed up. And she did the swanton off the top as well to everyone on the outside. So Tiffany is low key becoming like, I got this. Good ring awareness. Deserve the win. I was pulling for Chelsea because great character work, and she would have been fun to miss Money in the Bank. But overall, I thought everyone stepped up after the early kinks in the beginning, and they delivered to me the best match of the night and by far the greatest women's Money in the Bank match I have seen.
Scott, when Naomi did those splits, do you think Tonga Loa still would have missed the low blow?
I think there's a 75% chance. I'm going to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because that was a hell of a split.
She's so dang athletic. It's ridiculous.
But, you know, speaking of Naomi, forgot she was in the match that you said that.
She was not there to really shine in the match for sure.
She wasn't even there to glow. Wasn't even there to glow either. Everything you guys said is spot on. The table bump at the end was fantastic. And Chelsea Green, you mentioned the Santino thing. I think that's a spot on comparison. He was the runner up in the Elimination Chamber. That was the one Daniel Bryan won. He tapped him out after he hit the Cobra, kicked out of the Cobra. It was a great near fall. And then the Royal Rumble, that was, I believe that was the one Alberto Del Rio won in the biggest Royal Rumble ever, I think it was, the 40 man. But yeah, that's a really good spot on comparison as far as using her in that role to really get over an up and coming heel, because that's exactly what all those did, and that's exactly what we got with Tiffany. Great reaction there as well, and the backstage interaction after the match with her and Trish I thought was also interesting. And I think if that is something that they are building towards, because they always like to give the Money in the Bank something nice to put on their notch on their way, I think that'd be a really nice SummerSlam match if they do want to do Trish versus Tiffany.
Yeah, they were definitely building towards it. Trish was a babyface on this show, obviously in Toronto, and they had the little Toodles battle there in their interview segment. And I don't know if this caught, I don't think this caught microphone, but when Tiffy did her Toodles thing and Trish was like, didn't I just do that? And then I forget who was with her? And then Jackie was like, yeah, gimmick infringement or something. And then Trish goes, Toodles, eh? Like, you know, cause she's there in Canada. So I thought that was funny. Trish is like just dynamite with timing and comedy and stuff. So I think they would absolutely do fantastic. If that could be a match for SummerSlam, I'd be down. Want to give a shout out as well to Lyra, because she did the, she got stuck in the ladder and did the sit up and then did the German.
Yes.
That was a great spot as well. So yeah, kudos. You know, Zoe made up for her mistake, and I hope she's not hurt from that, that botch, but you know, like I said, she did a great job at the end there, and she made up. All right. So let's talk about, where's my notes here? Let's talk about the world title match, Seth Rollins, Damian Priest. This was an interesting one, and I'm really interested in what you all think about this match, because in some aspects, I thought it did the job, like from the angle perspective, but in other aspects, I was waiting for it to kind of get into gear. And they really needed Drew to come out. And maybe that was purposely. Maybe they were like, well, this is where the heat is going to be. So this is where we want the match to peak. I wasn't really feeling it. And for me to not really feel a Seth Rollins match, it is usually because of the other person. So do you have any thoughts? What were your thoughts on Damian Priest in this match, Scott?
I thought Damian Priest was fine. I thought the match was okay. You know, the kick out really kind of, I think that really hurt things, and it's going to hurt how the match is perceived. But for me, what really just, Drew McIntyre just comes off as a buffoon, man. Like, what are you doing? It doesn't, none of that makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you wait till the end of the match? Or why would, none of it makes sense. And like you said, I think what you said about the match not getting out of second gear, that's what it was. Like, I think that it just never kicked out of second gear. And then it's just, again, this felt like another match you would see on a main event of a Raw. This mm-hmm. felt like a Raw title main event.
The reason why I asked the Drew question is because kind of just looking at the Discord and kind of looking online, it seems like people do not see Drew as, I'm sorry, Drew and Damian on the same show. That's going to be tough for me. Damian, they don't see Damian as like the guy. And some of that is the booking. I don't think he's been booked necessarily as the guy. I think he's done a good job in his interviews. He's done a good job in the Judgment Day skits. But his title matches, I think the first one was against Jay, second one, you know, Punk screws Drew, and so this is the third one. There may have been another one. I think there's a Ray match on Raw as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he doesn't feel like the champ necessarily to some. And I didn't know if you thought that, or is like, what, like, what's the reason why this match or this program or this title hasn't been as hot since Seth had the title?
I'm gonna be real. I think a big part of it is I just think everybody feels like whoever has this title is just holding it for Gunther at SummerSlam. And mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of why this feels flat. And I think they've done a good job with him. Like, they've given him some big wins. Like, they've let him beat Drew in his hometown. I know they had the CM Punk thing, but you're like, Drew's not somebody that everybody just gets to beat, especially in his hometown. Like, you're getting this win over Seth Rollins, and actually you beat Drew 2 times in a row. But the biggest thing for me is it just feels like everybody knows Gunther is coming for that title. And that's the end game. And I thought
Baby Steiner was winning that title too, and he didn't actually win that title. But you know, I agree with you, to me that's
the biggest thing. It just feels like we're just keeping stuff warm until Gunther decides he's ready to sit in his chair.
Keila, did you have any issues with this match? Am I overstating? Maybe it was like me who had the problem with it.
No, honestly, I'm going to be real. I dozed off until Drew McIntyre came out. The match was all right. It was fair. Seth, you know, he did his thing out there. Damian Priest, to me, good character, a weak champion. Yeah. I was like, you know, I was asking for a title change for this very reason. What would be the stronger match? Would it be Damian Priest and Gunther? Would it be Seth Rollins versus Gunther, and the latter would have been the better matchup, and things did get more exciting when Drew came out there. And what happened at the end wasn't surprising. We called it. CM Punk was going to come out there, cost him the match, as expected. But I will say, what a wasted Money in the Bank cash-in. Like, one night is completely wiped. It's going to be a non-factor for the next year. And to me, that might have been a mistake in hindsight, because what a wasted victory, all done in under 90 minutes. It was worthless. I know that CM Punk has reclaimed the title as the biggest player hater of the year. He's flown to international locations to sabotage Drew McIntyre winning a championship. He did it in Scotland. He said, let me go to Toronto and cost you this match. I read on Twitter that the next logical step for Drew McIntyre is to kidnap Larry. And
yeah, what else can he do to get
what else can he do? He's going to go to Chicago and kidnap Larry and bring him home and have him play with his cat.
Let me tell you something. You don't play with a man's dog. Hey, we've all seen John Wick. We have all seen John Wick.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you what, CM Punk's not the one I'm worried about. You better be worried about AJ if you start playing with the dog. That's the one you need to be worried about.
AJ was already trying to fight people on Twitter who were setting off fireworks for 4th of July.
See what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Over the dog. I'm telling you, you're playing with that dog.
You know, I have seen CM Punk's dog before. And the reason I saw Larry is because at the first All Out that he was at, so he faced Darby Allin, we're there before the show even started, and all of a sudden, you know, half an hour before the show starts, this dog starts coming down the ramp, and then you see Punk running after him, like, where you going? Where you going? Come on. And so the dog got free. He got loose backstage and was trying to hang out with us in the crowd. So let's go through the Drew stuff, because essentially what happened before Drew made it a three-way is not really important, because it wasn't great before that. So Drew McIntyre, he comes out. Right before he comes out, Seth Rollins hits the Falcon Arrow or something, mm-hmm, on Priest. Goes down to pin him. Referee counts one. Referee counts two. Referee counts stops. Damian has not kicked out yet. And I thought, I was like, okay, did this dude get a stinger? Because like, he was shaking his hand. I don't think we know yet what happened. I think someone tried to ask Triple H in the press conference, but he didn't have an answer. Or maybe he did, and maybe folks who are in the chat can tell me what he said. But that moment, like right before you are about to get to the crescendo of the match, was a pretty giant screw up, I thought. And that's got to be on Damian. I can't, you know, some people were saying, well, Drew's music was actually supposed to be timed right during the three count, and then the referee might have been distracted and stops the count. Drew didn't hear the music, so he knew that if I don't hear, like, there's a plan B here. If you don't hear music, you may have to kick out. He probably was telling himself that and just didn't do it for whatever reason. So Drew comes out, and he announces he's joining the match to make it a triple threat. He immediately eats a super kick. Then he hits a Future Shock DDT on Rollins, and he's about to hit his flying kick on Rollins, and then Priest comes in and clothesline him, and then that's where Punk interferes. Punk takes McIntyre. He throws him out of the ring. He's hitting him with chairs. Grabs the title belt, takes a look at it, gives it some eyes, caresses it, and then decides he's going to use it on Drew. Clocks Drew with it. Priest hits the South of Heaven to keep the title. So Drew McIntyre wins the Money in the Bank, which we'll talk about in a second, but then loses his cash-in because of CM Punk. Now, I'm going to actually disagree with Keela slightly in that I don't think them burning this Money in the Bank is actually a bad thing, because I'm not sure they even knew when they wanted to belt Damian.
Like, I don't know if they like if they had wanted to, but they just kind of knew like Money in the Bank's coming up again. This dude hasn't cashed. We need to sort of figure out a way to do this. So because you got these two titles, obviously the Cody title run is going to be tied up through WrestleMania, whether he's got it, whether Rock's got it, whether Roman's got it, whomever. And on the other side, if we believe Gunther is the person to hold that thing, you don't want to have these 2 and 3 month title reigns, right? You don't want to have those, oh, you know, this guy wins the title and all of a sudden Scott's boy Miz comes in and just hijacks the title and, you know, that kind of stuff. That has happened successfully in some cases and in other cases not so successfully. Edge was probably the best one. He was the first one. So I think what they're doing is they're just basically going like, okay, we don't have to worry about booking this thing in to our chase. We kind of have our chases mapped out. Because according to Triple H, I don't know if you guys watched that WrestleMania 40 behind the scenes documentary. Triple H described his booking like a GPS. He plugs in the coordinates and it tells him where to go. And so in Triple H's coordinates that he plugged in for SummerSlam and WrestleMania, I'm not sure a Money in the Bank cash-in was in those plans. So they did burn it. I think Drew looks like a giant goober, but that's part of the story. In the story that they're trying to tell is this dude looks like a giant goober. Now, if they fight and CM Punk wins, then I'm going to be like, my gosh, this dude is just a giant goober.
He has to win the first match. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's got to win the first match. And after the match was over during the press conference, I don't know if you caught it, but Drew McIntyre crashed the post show. He elbow checked Adam Pearce. Ooh. And Adam said, you do it one more time, you're going to handle a job. And then Wade Barrett, who got physical, was physically removing Drew, saying, hey, man, you're going to lose your job if you mess around and hit this man one more time. Like, he physically removed Drew. So Drew is pissed off. He's ready for Monday. He's going to burn it down. But you are dumb, Drew. You know why you're dumb? Because you said what you were going to do.
Yeah, you told them.
You told, hey, guess what, world? I'm going to cash in and I'm going to win. And CM Punk said, bet I'm flying to Toronto and I'm going to make your life miserable. Bro, you are your own worst enemy, Drew. You said what you were going to do, and Punk said, I will see your ass in Toronto, and he lost. Yeah. I have zero sympathy for Drew McIntyre.
At least this time, Punk didn't go to referee Jess in the back and go like, give me your shirt. She's like, huh? I'm not giving you my shirt. My referee shirt. What are you doing here, dude? What you're telling me is when Wade Barrett grabbed Drew McIntyre, he didn't say, I've got some bad news. Because if he did that, he'd have been the GOAT.
It would have been great. But he was like dead serious. It was like Stu Bennett telling Drew McIntyre, you need to calm down before you get fired. You need to leave while you can. Because when Adam got elbowed, he was like legit heated. Like he was about to get scrap daddy for real on Drew. Like, you do it again and you're gone.
You see, that to Adam Pearce. He wouldn't do that to Nick Aldis, though. Yeah. He ain't moving Nick Aldis like that, but he'll do that to Scrap Daddy.
By the way, Andrew in the chat said that Triple H basically blamed the referee and said that the ref would have to answer to Triple H and not Paul Levesque. He did as a joke. But so, yeah, a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek about what happened. So clearly something went wrong there. And someone may have to pay. I don't know. I might make somebody pay a fine there for screwing up a big moment like that.
For sure.
All right. So this is where the John Cena thing happened. Trish introduced him. Farewell tour. All of that. Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn. I will admit, I was surprised. Not only that Braun lost, but just the way that he lost. I see Braun as an up-and-comer, as somebody who... the fans are really getting behind. They really created something with that long run towards the spear and the camera. You get like the blimp view from the arena. And that has really gotten over
Ricochet as well, taking like the craziest bump in the world on concrete to get this dude over. Shout out to Ricochet, who's probably going to be in AEW pretty soon. But I just thought, I was like, okay, this is kind of like the natural progression of the next young superstar. And what I've been saying on some of the other shows that I've done is the thing that I like, you know, I give crap to Triple H for his main event booking. Like, I haven't been really interested in Cody's defense. But what he has been doing is you still have all these eyeballs. Raw is still doing tremendously well. And you're building, you're bringing up some of this young talent, and you're putting them in matches and you're giving them wins. And like Braun, I think Braun has been handled perfectly. Not that Braun has to win every single match. I just think that if you're going to beat him, he just shouldn't be beaten so clean. It's not like Sammy is not, if Sammy's not a top guy, Sammy's like the upper of upperest mid card talent. So losing to Sammy is no crime in of itself. I just thought that they would kind of, you give him a little bit of an out to lose this match because he's been such a menace on Raw. But for him to lose as clean as he did, it was just interesting to me. And I don't think Braun is done. I don't think he's, you know, I don't think he's in any way a lesser talent. Like, you could completely do the story of like, yeah, dude, you're a young dude. Here's a savvy vet. You got okey-doked, you know, you fell for the banana and the tailpipe and he got you. So I'm interested in the progression of Braun and what they do with Braun. But it was interesting to kind of get him going higher, 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 and then boop, lost. I was just surprised at that. Scott, what did you think about that match?
I thought the match was really good. I was expecting more of a, to me, I thought this match was going to play out, and I talked about this on our show. I thought this was going to play out how Umaga John Cena played out from New Year's Revolution, the first time they met for the WWE title. At the time, Umaga was undefeated, and he was kind of steamrolling him, very similar to the way Braun was kind of running things, but he ran for a hip attack in the corner. All it took was one quick second, John Cena roll up, you know, grabbed a little extra leverage. That's kind of what I was expecting. Braun goes for a big spear, misses, maybe runs into the corner. Sammy can roll him up, just use his momentum and kind of catch him off guard, flash pin. Like you said, that, I mean, he essentially just beat the Rook, you know, took advantage of a rookie mistake and beat him, you know, 1-2-3 clean in the middle of the ring. I was very surprised by that. But at the same time, you know, we always talk about not getting clean finishes, not keeping your champions strong, making them, you know, not giving outs and stuff like that, and excuses for losses. So in that sense, I can't knock what they did. They're keeping Sammy strong for whoever does end up beating him or going after that title. So now whenever someone does beat Sammy, it is going to mean something, because he's done a really good job after Gunther did an incredible job of making that title feel main event.
Yeah, like no Johnny Knoxville showing up and like flashing him or something and him getting distracted. None of that.
Yeah.
Akilah, what did you think about this one?
I thought it was the third best match on the show. I thought it was well worked by both guys. I enjoyed the action. Braun Breaker has new music. I don't know
how
I feel about it. I was like, so now it's heavy metal and there's lyrics and I'm unmoved. I think this is not who he is in terms of presentation, but it's loud and it's aggressive. So good for you. The match itself was very good. I was a little surprised by the finish as well. I thought that Braun had it. And then Sammy won clean with a Huluva kick in the corner and boom. I'm like, okay, this is not what I expected. I still think that Braun Breaker's time is going to come. He will be a champion probably before the end of the summer, but I thought this was definitely a choice for him not to win this match, but it doesn't hurt him in the long run. He has a bright future. I think that he has not even tapped into who he truly is as a wrestler yet. It's a hybrid of a lot of things he's great at, but once he really settles in on a style that fits him perfectly, he's going to be unstoppable. We said this a couple of years ago. He is going to be a WrestleMania main eventer. I don't think that name is going to stick as a WrestleMania main eventer. He should be Braun Steiner. But when that day comes, it will be a moment.
The Steiner Brothers documentary is the last one was on A&E. And by the way, Scott, do you know that they're doing one on your boy?
I do. And there will be a full review coming on The Wrap. Me and Keela are real excited to review and talk about that. So look forward to that.
I will not be there for that. I will be there out of protest. I will have no comments. I'll let Scott have the floor as our fellow historian. So you can have that. You can have that entire segment. I'll give you a solid 10 minutes before we move on.
So when Miz, I remember when Miz comes in, he's like a host of SmackDown or something. And his catchphrase, or the thing that he's trying to get over, is he keeps going, hoorah, and it was crickets. Like, you thought people were silent when Solo beat Cody. This was like, just people were dying. Now, I always root for The Miz because I was a Real World guy. Like, I watched him, you know, on The Real World. And just the fact that I was like, man, they're putting him in these spots and he's not doing well. I hope he doesn't just die. And this dude is still there.
The come up is real.
He's come up is real. His longest career ever. So shout out to Miz. Even though, you know, I'm normally fine with Miz. I'm not fine with world title Miz, but any other kind of Miz, I'm kind of good with. So I was talking about the Steiner Brothers doc. The Steiner Brothers documentary is not good. It's an hour and they jump around and like they don't tell the story. And it's just, I was very disappointed because those are my guys too, right? Like Steiner Brothers, when they get famous, I'm a teenager and I'm watching every squash match because I want to see Scott do the Frankensteiner. It's like the coolest move ever. But the cool thing about the documentary is you get to see both Rick and Scott young. And if you see them young and then you look at Braun, you're like, oh my God, like Braun, like if you took the photos of all three of them young, they could all three be brothers. Like they're just like, you know, they have the same build. They look similar. Athletically, they're similar. And, you know, he looks like his pops. He sounds like Scott. And it's pretty cool. But the name of Rick Steiner. And I knew this, but it was kind of fun to hear again. So his real name is Rob Rex Steiner. And so for the announcer to say, and in this corner weighing 245 pounds, Rob Rex Steiner, like the promoter was like, dude, it's too hard. Rex Steiner as a name is just too much of a mouthful. How about we just take Rex Steiner as the last name and we'll chop it and you'll just be Rick Steiner. So that's how he got the name. And it's just, yeah, if you see that, you're like young Scott, young Rick, Braun, like it's money. That'd be the only reason to watch it. But I think Braun, oh, here's the other question I have for you. John The Rock and I did this on the Fight Game podcast a few weeks ago. In 5 years, who is, I forgot how I stated it. Who is higher in the promotion in WWE between Trick Williams and Braun Breaker?
Oh, I think it's Braun.
Interesting.
I don't even think it's close.
Now, it's not about who's the better wrestler, who's the bigger star.
But I think that's going to be, yeah, and I think him being the better wrestler is going to propel him to bigger heights, and because he's going to put on better matches. Like, I don't think Trick will ever be as good of a wrestler as Braun is right now. And Braun's going to get way better. So I think it's Braun and it's not even close. And honestly, even when it comes to promos, Braun doesn't say a lot, but what he says just has so much intensity. And I just haven't seen Trick in that light yet. I believe Braun. So yeah, I got Braun easily.
You got Braun as well, Keela?
I do, and I love Trick. And Braun, I think, is the more complete package of the two. His promos, when you allow him to cook, I've seen him on WWE Raw Talk on Peacock. Those exclusives you see on YouTube, great promos. They're not forced, very organic. And I will say that his biggest benefit during his last year on NXT was working with Baron Corbin, because it brought something out in him in terms of personality and got him more comfortable to be maybe a quasi baby face or a heel. He can do both. He's so cool that he can be over as a heel, but it'll be so cool as a heel that you want to cheer for him. It's kind of where we are right now. So in 5 years, I do see Braun being the more over guy in WWE. And Trick will be right up there with him. But in terms of the complete package, it's Braun.
I pegged Trick in the John Cena role, and I pegged Braun in the Kurt Angle role. Better wrestler, better matches. But I do think Trick has a chance to be a bigger star because he's got that unique charisma where you just want to root for this dude and you want to see him do well. Now, maybe when we watch Heatwave and I see Sean Spears in the ring, maybe I won't think that way just because of the stench of Sean Spears in that match. It drives me crazy. But I do think there is something with Trick that maybe even Braun doesn't have from a personality standpoint. And that is just that likability. Like, he's got that connection already, which is fantastic. And I hope that they can, you know, if you're Triple H and you go, okay, these are two of sort of the next guys, how do we get them to that John Cena, Kurt Angle level? That's going to be fun to watch. Maybe I was going to say maybe we get John Cena and Trick Williams, but that might be too left feet, like trying to dance or something. And might not be the best match. All right, let's get to the opener of this show, and we'll shut this down. So we had the Money in the Bank, you know. But if we were actually doing the real podcast the way that they did this show, we would talk about a segment, and then we would just bullshit for 10 minutes and go get water and, you know, run a commercial or something, because that's what this show was. And I do want to ask you guys about that after we talk about this match, just sort of the pacing and everything. But I was looking at this match and I'm like, okay, 15 whole minutes just to get through all the introductions for these guys. Jey Uso, Andrade, LA Knight, Chad Gable, Carmelo Hayes, Drew McIntyre. I thought it was well done. I thought Chad Gable was probably my favorite person in this match. He was really the kind of the connective tissue for me. I thought Carmelo Hayes was a little bit of maybe even too much of a daredevil for my taste, because I want my man to wake up and not be you know, and be able to get out of bed tomorrow morning. LA Knight, I kind of wonder if he was even needed in this match. Kind of what Scott was saying about Naomi, there was really no shine on him. Jey, you know, Jey's got that entrance, crowd is with him, just on fire from that, you know, kind of relationship with the fans perspective. And Andrade was just trying to do the craziest stuff in this match. Drew McIntyre is, you know, there were moments where I was like, is Drew still here? What's going on? Did Punk already grab him and we just didn't see it? And then he would just be there and be ready for the next spot. So Chad Gable, he was doing a series of German suplexes, including German suplexing the ladder, which I think then hit Andrade. So he got a little crazy there. Hayes, Andrade, and Knight were on the ladder. And Andrade did a sunset flip powerbomb on Hayes onto the ladder bridge, which was between the ladder and the middle rope. Gable at one point had grabbed onto the briefcase, but Jey moved the ladder. So then Gable was hanging from the briefcase and he fell. And I thought what I thought they were doing is I thought they were trying to do a countdown where Chad was going to be like, all right, I'm going to fall. I'm going to tell you when I'm going to fall. And as I'm falling, you hit me with a spear. That's what I thought they were trying to do.
Oh my God.
That could have been dangerous. So I'm kind of glad that they didn't do that. But Chad did take the bump. Jey sets up the spear, hits him with the spear. Jey has the briefcase in his hands. McIntyre threw an entire ladder at my guy's face. And the shot that they had was a little wide. I'm hoping it got nowhere near his face. But that was scary. I was like, man, the worst ladder spot in the history of WWE. was the one with Mercury, Joey Mercury, where he just got knocked in the face and his whole entire face was rearranged by a ladder. So whenever I see stuff like that, I just like, man, just nowhere near the face. But I'm assuming it was done safely and that wide shot was just because it wasn't, he didn't, you know, nearly hit the face. And then Drew grabs it and grabs the briefcase and wins the match. So that set up the entire night. You know, I would lean women's ladder match over men's ladder match from spots, what I will remember. You know, the men's match was probably a little bit more organized, maybe, and not as many screw ups. But overall, I enjoyed the women's Money in the Bank match better. What'd you think, Scott?
Yeah, I agree. The women's match was better, but the men's match had some nice bumps too. There was also Chad Gable hitting LA Knight with a suplex on the outside on a ladder from inside the ring. It was a good way to start the show. And one thing I have to mention, Jey Uso in that entrance, man, when that Uso hits that first string, like, that's a vibe. Like, yeah. The crowd is with it. They're singing, they're throwing their hands up, and like he's a whole vibe when he comes out. I thought the fit was great too. So the entrance is, like you said, that was a good 15, 20 minutes. If I'd have known I had that much time, I could have went and got something to eat and got back in time before the match started, you know? Instead, I spent an extra $10 on DoorDash. If I'd have known I had that much time, I could have saved me $10.
That's what I did, too. I was like, my Chipotle is $32? What? Right. I could have just drove to the store and spent $10.
And had time. But yeah, Matt, I thought it was a good way to start the show. Andrade was just a body. Carmelo Hayes had a couple nice spots. LA Knight, like, why not have, like, why wasn't Logan Paul in this match? I'm still on that hill. Like, why wasn't he in this match? Because I'm gonna tell you what, you put him in this match, you guarantee at least three or four more insane spots.
Yeah,
but it is what it is.
Yeah, what was he doing tonight? Do you have another gig or something? Like,
I don't know. Maybe he was helping his brother train to fight an 80-year-old man. I don't know.
Yeah. Wasn't he like at like a video game championships or something recently? Like,
was he at the white party? Was he at the white party?
He may have been at the white party. You know, so I think both cons were at the white party.
So
Tony and Nick.
The biggest question is though, which one of them was talking to hanging out with Drake and which one of them was listening to Kendrick? That's the question.
Oh man, Keela, we'll talk about the match in a second, but I wanted to kind of build upon something that Scott said, which is this Jey Uso, what they've created with him, what he has created. My only worry with Jey is there's going to be a moment where he's going to need to promo, and he's going to need to promo in like a very heartfelt, emotional way. He and LA Knight did a yeet yeah the other day where I was like, okay, we're jumping the shark here with this yeet thing. Like, we need to pull back on it just a little bit. We don't have to pull back on it completely. It's selling merch. He's got yeet glasses. He's got the shirt. I get it. It is something that works for him. But I think in order for him to take that next level to be that better baby face, I do think he's going to have to actually start to cut real promos. I do like the rhythm and the rhyme in which he cuts them. But ever since the Yeet thing started, it's been less kind of like actual direction in his promo and more just relying on how over this word is. What do you think about that?
I've been thinking about that for a while now. I think that the gimmick is starting to lose steam a little bit. I think it's a great way to engage the crowd, obviously, and they're there for him every step of the way. But right now, what he's doing has zero gravitas, and that will change when Roman comes back. And when he realigns the original bloodline, you're going to get the Jey Uso of 3 years ago, even a year ago, before Yeet became a thing. And he's going to cut those serious promos when he and Jimmy reunite. You're going to get that seriousness that we have been missing from Jey. you need that moment of, okay, this is when I'm serious and I can really cut this promo to engage the crowd. He has done that so many times when there were no people there during the Thunderdome era, to with people there when he was fully with the Bloodline and he was interacting with his brother, his cousin, and ultimately Sami Zayn. So right now, there's no meat on the bone for Jay to really get on right now. When Roman returns, when it's time to ride for his family, that is when the Jey Uso we're looking for that can be the money promo will be there, and the Yeet will still be there, but it will not be as relied upon as a crutch to really get his promos over. Because when he didn't have that, he was getting over by how he was speaking and how he was emotional with what he was saying.
He is a fantastic show opener. I want him to be a show closer, and I don't think that that character is there yet, but I love that dude. I think that, you know, I've been really hoping that he could, because the Usos together are great. Like they're when they get back together, it's going to be awesome. But at the same time, I thought, you know, this chance was a good chance for him to kind of shine a little bit. And unfortunately, you know, for Jimmy, it hasn't worked as well. I'm not sure why, because I do enjoy both of those guys. But Jay has really attempted to go solo, knowing that they're going to come back as a group. And so he's utilized this time really well. And maybe the next time, you know, maybe after this Bloodline stuff is done, he's had his reps, his repetitions as a solo guy. And he's like, okay, I've done this, and now I got to dig a little deeper. And then he could be in the main event, because now with Seth back, he's probably slotted a little bit lower than he would have been. But I still dig him. I think he's got a great opportunity, and hopefully that he continues to grow that character, because it is a really fun character. All right, just quick thoughts on the opener for you, Keela.
That was really good. I enjoyed the match. Andrade getting no reaction was very sad, but he said, okay, I'm going to make y'all respect me when I do some crazy stuff, which he did. And it kind of woke them up a little bit. But Chad Gable was also my Money in the Bank MVP. That dude came through, and the fans, you know, they see him as a star. He's booed, but they see him as somebody. And I think that when he gets his new Alpha Academy up and running with the Creeds and Ivy now, that is going to be a mean faction to contend with on Monday Night Rob. He was so great. Suplexing the ladder was a moment that was so creative and different, and he still hit his target, which was cool. But for me, the standouts were Jay, Andrade, and Drew. But I just felt, and Chad, obviously, but I felt like LA Knight was just taking up space, didn't do very much in the match. And as Scott said, where was Logan Paul? He would have added some spice and excitement to this match. And I think that element was missing a bit. Compared to the women, this was tame. They didn't do any crazy stuff that was dangerous. The women said, hold my beer and my water and my wine. We got that on lockdown. But I like the differences in both matches, that they had different things in them that made them stand out in different ways. And Drew McIntyre, as expected, won. But that's his fault, because you told the world your plan, and I feel zero sympathy for you.
LA Knight in this match was Kazuchika Okada in Anarchy in the Arena. Wait, where's the camera? Is it close to me? Okay, no, I'm chilling. Oh, the camera's here? Okay, let me go do something. Like that was Okada in Anarchy, and that was kind of LA Knight. He's like, hey, like, why do I got to waste my body doing this crazy stuff? I saw LA Knight on an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. There's an episode where Terry Crews's character, I think he was an efficient, and they did like a flashback to when he was he I guess he only did weddings that were held with like people who went to the gym. Like there were these two big buff people, so one of those buff people was LA Knight. So I was like, ah, This dude's everywhere. Because if you watch old shows, LA Knight's an extra in probably all your favorite shows, but you just gotta get it on, hit the pause button at the right time, or you miss them. All right, last thing here. I'm very interested in what you guys think. So there's one side of the fence, AEW. They have a 90-minute pre-show, 4-hour pay-per-view, 14 matches span 5.5 hours. Then you have these WWE PLEs, five matches spanning 3 hours, and a lot of opportunities for us to use the restroom, to get some snacks, to, I don't know, get on the phone, whatever. There's got to be a happy medium, right? Like, I feel like 3 hours in 40 minutes and like seven matches or eight matches, because I don't know if, you know, Bayley and Piper Niven from SmackDown would have necessarily been the match to throw on here, but I could have used Bayley defending against somebody rather than watching The Rock on the behind the scenes documentary talk for 5 minutes. Like, I watched that stupid thing already. Like, what I got now, I know people are going to say, well, you know, they have commercial breaks and this is for the commercial. Yeah. Guess what? I pay the full boat for Peacock, so I don't have to watch these dumb commercials. There's got to be a happy medium for this stuff, because I was flat out, if I didn't have company, if I wasn't talking to people and I was trying to watch this thing live, I'd have been bored out of my mind for a lot of this show. I'd have probably jumped in my editing bay and started making reels or something during matches. But like, there's like, what is the best case scenario for you, Scott? If you're watching a live wrestling show, something you're very excited about, do you lean more towards like 14 matches in 5 hours? Do you like it five matches in 3 hours? What is like the rhythm that you want to watch wrestling?
I feel like right now we're in between watching paint dry and actually blowing on the paint to make it dry. And it's honestly, I think WrestleMania kind of had a really good pace and balance. Like, they got about eight matches and the card is about three and a half. And they actually have some talking segments on there. So to me, that's probably the best pace, because five's not enough. Like, I think we've all mentioned it at some point during this review. It was like 15 minutes for entrances. So yeah, there's that. So, I mean, and then you're talking about the commercials. I don't know about that. I paid $20 one time all year and I ain't paying no Peacock. So I don't know about the full Monty and none of that stuff. You know, I'm on that Cyber Monday deal. But but like you said, there are people like paying that, and nobody wants to see The Rock. They probably already seen that. And I'm sure they showed it 3-4 times. And I think like seven matches, three hours, three and a half. That tag title match that was on SmackDown,
yeah,
very easily could have fit on here.
Absolutely.
The women's title match from Raw, Selena versus Liv Morgan, would have fit perfectly on this card. Like,
that's a good match.
I think seven to eight matches, I think is the sweet spot. Five is not enough, and 15 is just... for the sickos, I guess. For the sickos.
Definitely for the sickos. What do you think, Keila?
Yeah, I agree. And the fact they treated Money in the Bank as a big show, and it's like a big five for WWE. We had the Canadian and national anthem being sung before the show started. So you making it feel like a big deal. So if you got Money in the Bank as your big five outside of the United States, you need to have six or seven matches on the card. The matches Scott mentioned from Friday and Monday could have easily been on this card as well, would have had a bigger reaction. The title change with DIY would have been bigger. The match would have been longer. No commercial interruptions. Liv and Zelina would have had good heat with Dirty Diamond, that element as well. The Strato would have got over with that crowd too. So all of this to me says that WWE, less is more. You need to do a bit more for your big five pay-per-view shows. The other B shows, you can do five or six matches, no problem there. But for your big five PLEs per year, you need an eight match card, because yeah, now you have SummerSlam and WrestleMania being two nights. So you're going to have to do a bit more for the for your other three shows throughout the year that are considered your big five. For AEW, 15 is way too much. It's way too long. Like, just no. You need to do two pre-show matches and call it a day and cap that thing at 10.
Yeah, if I get a Serpentico or an Angelico match on a 0 hour, I know that's one you could leave off. But like Scott said, for the sickos, that's for the sickos. All right, when are you all going to be back with your normal weekly episode of The Wrap?
Well, we'll be back on tomorrow after Heat Wave. That will not be a live show. We're going to record it, drop it late Sunday night. Then we'll be back live on YouTube after Money in the Bank on Monday Night Raw, because Drew McIntyre's meltdown should be documented live on the air for the record. So that'd be the next two times you can catch us on The Wrap talking all things WWE. Hopefully Heat Wave is going to be a good show. And here's hoping that during the main event, there'll be no crickets in Toronto regarding the outcome of this match. Let's hope we hear Wolf That Trick over the sound, or Ego Ethan Page winning the match. We'll see.
All right. So podcast feed, Fight Game Media Network. You can search, or just go to the website, fightgamemedia.com. You can find all of the podcast feeds that you have. Any podcast feed you use will be there, and you can grab the show from there. And then Monday after Raw, we will put up the live stream, and you can click on that notify button if you want to hear Keela and Scott chat about what happens on Raw. That will also, after the fact, go up in our Fight Game Media audio feed as well. But everything, you could just go to fightgamemedia.com and you can find all of our content. And yeah, we are going to be kind of, I don't know, I feel like, you know, obviously Royal Rumble kicks off kind of the road to WrestleMania, but there's some stuff bubbling here in the end of the summer with the Bloodline stuff that I'm really interested in seeing the stories that Triple H and Paul Heyman and Roman and Cody want to tell. So I still, you know, even if this one did not hit the way that I wanted it to hit, I still thought it was a good show. I still think that there are some things that they have laid down angles wise that will be very interesting. So yeah, check out Keela and Scott Monday night here on this YouTube channel. All right. For Scott, for Keela, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.